The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at an historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laugh as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. That's our one and only super producer. Give it up for him. His name is Max Williams. They call me Ben. Noel, I think everybody at some point in their life has needed to make a heartfelt apology. It can be difficult, but it's an important thing to do, and usually you'll be the better for it.
Well, let me take this as an opportunity to make a heartfelt apology to you, Ben. It was I that ate your leftovers in the office fridge. Now, to be fair, they'd been in there for months. I probably got deathly ill as a result of eating them, so that was my own comeuppance. And you probably had forgotten about them in the first place, and yet somehow I feel the need to make a big to-do about apologizing. Your name was on it, Ben, and I disregarded that. And
Is that a true story?
No, it's not a true story, but it's okay. It's a good frame story. You're not a leftover lever, Ben. You know thyself.
I feel like
Noel, you could apologize to me.
Oh yeah, for drinking all your nice whiskey.
No, for just calling me your nemesis on like every podcast, despite not doing anything to you.
Well, I mean that's debatable. To you, how does one do something to someone? You know,
I see how it is.
Yeah, no, I do apologize. I drank a lot of your fancy whiskey one time, and I do apologize for that.
While I was watching curling.
Well, now that we're all good, I will give one example. This is old school How Stuff Works lore. I hope I don't get in too much trouble for this, but I did have a fridge thief interaction many years ago at our old office in Buckhead. I'd saved half of a Philly cheesesteak sandwich on a Friday, and I came in to the office on the weekend because I still always am going in on the weekend, and I found that my Philly cheesesteak was missing. And I was on a mission to figure out who did it. So I started investigating. I hit the streets or the hallways and the cubicles. And I eventually learned that my cheesesteak had been taken by none other than my dear friend, a good friend of the show, Josh Clark. In his defense, he did come clean when I asked him. And he said, "Why do you care?" And I said, "Because it's like beyond a party foul, man. You ate my cheesesteak." And he did feel kind of bad, but I do think it was hilarious. So every time I look at Josh, I still think that guy owes me half a cheesesteak.
Yeah, was it good? I mean, cheesesteaks don't really keep super well, to be fair.
That's why I was in the day after. He moved quick.
Mm-hmm. So, was your name on it?
This, It was clearly half an eaten cheesesteak wrapped in foil. It's like clearly not something left over from a party that's just up for grabs. But anyway, forgiveness, apologies. That's what this story is about. And this, I thought, had a wholesome ending. So this is an interesting, fascinating tale from history. It does have some ridiculous moments, but we can't wait to dive in. Let's start with a tragedy. If you live in the U.S., you are well aware of the events of Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941.
And if you don't live in the U.S. and want a primer, you should watch the Michael Bay documentary, Pearl Harbor, starring, what's his name?
Ben Affleck, is he?
Ben Affleck. Yeah, that's right. He's in it. No, it's
Josh Hartnett.
It's apparently quite bad. But it was a big deal. It was one of the only times we've actually been directly attacked, you know, on American soil. 9/11 is often compared to Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. But I love you point this out. It was one of the only times, but it was not the only time the U.S. was under air attack by Japanese forces. If you go to September 9th, 1942, there was a Japanese float plane piloted by an officer named Nobu Fujita, which took off from a submarine that was off Cape Blanco on the southwestern Oregon coast. And this attack occurs in the context of a couple of other attacks. Earlier that year, on February 23rd, 1942, there was an attack on the Elwood oil field outside of Santa Barbara. And this attack sparked a panic in the U.S. populace. They were not used to dealing with war on the home front because, you know, the U.S. is geographically quite fortunate in terms of its security. There are two massive oceans on either side, two friendly countries to the south and the north. It's hard to get here if you are an army that is attempting to attack. So people are still very concerned. Like, I think your 9/11 comparison is pretty apt, Noel, because you remember in the aftermath of the attack on September 11th, 2001, people all over the country were worried that their town, no matter how big or small, might be the next target. And that's kind of how people were feeling during World War II. They thought Japanese forces would be able to get past the ocean, would be able to touch them on home soil. This was not a crazy fear. You know, it didn't come out of the blue. There were several attacks, as we have mentioned. And at this time, the Imperial Japanese Navy was super formidable. It was actually the most powerful navy on the planet during the Pearl Harbor attacks. It had the biggest, most heavily armed battleships ever built, the Yamato and the Musashi, and their naval aviation was super awesome. Japanese forces made the largest submarines of World War II. They could carry their own aircraft, which might sound pretty crazy today. And this I-25 submarine we're talking about had a surprise that submarines today do not possess. They had planes that could fly from the sub and then fly back to the sub. They were retrievable, reusable. They did this by folding up. The technology is amazing, but that's where our story takes place. The I-25, we can talk about the stats some if you want. It was pretty big. 17 torpedoes, had a naval gun, 140 millimeters, 95 individuals aboard, and it had one Yokosuka E-14Y seaplane. The Allied forces called this the Glenn. And this was responsible for the only attack on a mainland American military site during World War II. So the other one that wasn't Pearl Harbor.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
If we've learned anything in the process of doing this podcast, just living life, it's that there's always a catch.
So when we heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month if you get a three-month plan, we looked at each other and we thought, nah, what's the catch?
But here's the thing. In this case, there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online.
Yeah, they cut out that middleman cost of retail stores and they pass those sweet, sweet savings directly to you. We're not joking. We have tried out Mint Mobile ourselves and it's super convenient. And it actually, like, we tried to find a catch and there's not one.
So to get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan.
Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever been.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com.
Yeah, and on June 21st, 1942, along the Oregon coastline, this was the only mainland attack of an American military site during World War II, and it was along the Oregon coastline. And there was an American fishing vessel that the Japanese submarine I-25 very sneakily used to evade capture, to evade detection. They kind of, what would you say, Ben, kind of tailed them a little bit, I guess? Or, you know, it's sort of the equivalent of like drafting someone in Mario Kart, or if you hang out behind them, it sort of like guards you from others and even pick up a little extra steam. That wouldn't have been the case here, but certainly would have been a way to keep under the radar, as it were, because, I mean, they would have seen the fishing vessel and maybe not paid attention to what was close around. But it surfaced around Fort Stevens, which was a kind of long-in-the-tooth army base that actually dated back to the Civil War. So it was in really poor state, needed some TLC. But just before midnight, the I-25 used its above-deck weapon, like a Gatling gun kind of thing. Or I don't know, Ben, what would you say? It's 140 millimeters. So is that like shells? Is that like, what would you call that, like ordnance? Like a larger-scale mortar situation? Or it's somewhere in between just regular machine gun shells and larger ordnance, right?
Yeah, I would call it, I would say think of it like a tank gun. Almost.
There you go.
That's 140 millimeters.
So not a massive mortar round, but somewhere in between, like an anti-aircraft gun or something like that, or a tank gun, like you said. And they shot 17 of those 140-millimeter bad boys at that fort. And the commander of Fort Stevens actually ordered his men not to return fire because he didn't want to give away their positions, and he thought that the flashes from the gun muzzles of the installations there on the fort would have revealed that. And this, you know, apparently worked. At first, I was kind of like, well why did this matter? Because, but again, because of the size, the medium size of the rounds that were being fired by the Japanese, they needed to be able to focus them into areas where they were actually going to kill personnel, because this wouldn't have been enough to, like, take down the whole fort, for example. So by kind of hiving their positions, they essentially rendered the attack a little bit null and void. So instead, a nearby baseball field actually took a lot of the damage.
Yeah. Yeah, which meant the bombardment wasn't very successful. The Fort Stevens plan worked. But this just goes to show you how good the I-25 was at getting close enough to do some damage. And forgive me, fellow Ridiculous Historians, every time I'm saying I-25, I know it's the submarine, but it keeps making me think of interstates.
Yeah, so
the
same here.
The submarine, which is not an interstate, makes history again when it does the first ever bombing of the mainland, continental United States, by an enemy aircraft. This is collectively known as the Lookout Air Raids. Now, this is where we see our guy, Warrant Officer Nabu Fujita. His commander, Meiji Tagami, tells the crew to deploy that aircraft we're talking about, the Glenn, armed with two pretty big incendiary bombs, 168 pounds each. Fujita is flying under the cover of darkness, crosses onto dry land. The idea is that if they drop these incendiary bombs in the right place, they can maybe start a forest fire and have people in a panic. I want to shout out a couple of sources here. Of course, history.com, several articles from there. And of course, Civilian Military Intelligence Group. This comes from a blog post, but it's worth checking out because it has pictures where you can see the actual submarine we're describing, as well as the plane that Fujita was flying. Americans didn't realize they were under attack for a while. Some people had heard the ship or heard the plane while they were on the ground. It wasn't until 6:42 in the morning, the next morning, that a U.S. Forest Service guy named Howard Gardner was at the Mount Emily Fire lookout and spotted the plane. He said the engine sounded like a Model T backfiring. And mm-hmm. he called it in, and no one thought it was a threat. They were like, look, this is just some guy in a plane. He's over the wilderness in the middle of nowhere. Cool your jets, Gardner. Pump your brakes. Watch the forest.
And another really good resource to check out, by the way, is a site called nowiknow.com. And there is an article from 2010 about the Lookout Air Raid, which we're actually about to get into. So later that day, the forest fires were discovered. And this Forest Service ranger guy, I guess, he went to check it out. And they initially thought that lightning had caused them. They later found a crater that can only have been caused by bomb fragments or bombing from air raids. And eventually they found the nose cone of the bomb. And it, of course, had telltale markings on it that indicated they were of Japanese origin. And 3 weeks later, on September 29th, early in the morning, Fujita led a second round of attacks. He dropped two more bombs into the forest near Port Orford, which is around 50 miles up the coast from Brookings, Oregon. And again, the planes were sighted.
Yeah. Yep. They found them. And the U.S. Forest Service employees also described things that sound like bombs, flashes, smoke. They search the area. They don't find anything. And they say, okay, you know what probably happened? There's probably a small wildfire that burned out because the forest is so damp. So again, they go back to that other explanation. Lightning strikes, they say. They don't find any fragments of bombs. They don't release any information about this until the next year. And let's look at Fujita. This is where I think the story gets really, really interesting. So Fujita himself, yeah, he very wholesome. Yes, he survives until the end of World War II and all the, you know, horrors that happen in Japan at that time. He eventually opens a hardware store near Tokyo and like the kind of Tokyo suburbs. Unfortunately, the hardware store goes bankrupt later and he takes a job where he works in a wire company for a pretty long time. And he doesn't really talk about his time in the military. It doesn't come up. And if you've ever had a veteran in your family from any war, you know that often people have survived war. it's not their first topic of conversation, and understandably so. So it came to pass that Fujita's entire family had no idea that he attacked the U.S. mainland until in 1962, he gets invited to Brookings, the place he tried to bomb. And the Japanese government takes a minute and they say, okay, we got to figure out if they're going to try you as a war criminal. And they say, all right, we get the vibe that they're not going to try you as a war criminal. And so he says, okay, I'm going to go. And he takes along with him his family's samurai sword. It's been in his family for 400 years. His plan is, look, I'm going to present this to the town as an apology for my attack. And if they don't accept my apology, I'm going to commit seppuku, a ritual suicide.
That is intense, man. I mean, it's not uncommon. I mean, you know, if a Japanese, a very proud Japanese person is shamed in some way or seen as bringing shame on their family, this thing is absolutely on the table. His daughter, Yuriko Sukara, told the New York Times in an interview, quote, he thought perhaps people would still be angry and would throw eggs at him. If that happened, as a Japanese, he wanted to take responsibility for what he had done. And that's a pretty heavy way of taking responsibility. So then just to understand, I mean, he's apologizing or he's regretful because he made a mistake or because he did not agree with the mission of the war anymore.
I think the idea is that he's officially, no, apologies are a big, big thing in that culture. So I think his motivation, if we could guess, is to apologize for possibly putting civilians in danger, possibly destroying, you know, wilderness. And it's his way of making peace or atoning. We should talk about seppuku, if you're not aware of it, Ridiculous Historians, it's sometimes called harikiri in the West, and it is super grisly. It starts by you stab yourself in the stomach and in your belly with a short sword, and then you cut across, turning the blade upwards, slicing open your stomach. It's almost like disemboweling yourself.
And then, if I'm not mistaken, it requires a buddy who then chops your head off. Or at least in some versions of it that I've seen.
Yeah. A kaishakunin, they're called. Mm-hmm. You can read more, What is Seppuku, in history.com by Evan Andrews. But yes, yeah, so he was serious about this. And think of his poor kid. This is a lot to find out, right? One day your dad says, I was in the war, as you know, but I bombed the United States. They've invited me to come back. I'm taking our family's sword, and I'm going to commit grisly suicide if they don't accept my apology. That's a lot for a Tuesday. You know what I mean?
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
No joke. Yeah, I mean, it's almost a flex in a way. I mean, I get it. I appreciate the sentiment, but man, not necessary, you know? Water under the bridge. And thankfully, that's what it was. The town welcomed him and appreciated the gesture so much that local churches and businesses actually raised money to help him come visit in 1962. They essentially gave him the key to the city. He was made Grand Marshal of the Azalea Festival, which sounds delightful. And he even, out of his own pocket, paid for students from Brookings to go to Japan as well. So almost started like a little exchange, you know, foreign exchange student kind of situation. He also donated money to the town's library for kids' books on Japan and their culture. Hopefully he got one on seppuku for kids, because that's important to know about.
I think I remember that from the Scholastic Book Fair. It was really colorful stories.
It was in the style of the Very Hungry Caterpillar.
Oh, God.
Yeah. The Choose Your Own Adventure version is kind of grim, though. So be warned, folks. God, I love Scholastic Book Fairs. And Book It. Oh, well, anyway. So this is so beautiful. It's so wholesome. He did, by the way, present the sword. Even if they didn't want to accept it, it was kind of like, he felt obligated to do so. And it is to this day in the city hall. It's displayed in the library of the city hall. He was made an honorary citizen of the town shortly before he passed away in 1997. And per him and his family's request, some of his ashes were buried at the bombing site. When he donated the sword in 1962, and he had just a beautiful quote about it. Do you want to do the honors, Noel?
I sure do. He said, "It's in the finest samurai tradition to pledge peace and friendship by presenting a sword to a former enemy."
Wonderful. And, you know, this period of time is so full of obscure stories and ridiculous history. You know, if you're interested, we have another story about a failed assault on mainland U.S. by Japanese forces. It's an episode we did a while back. The concept was novel, though it was ultimately unsuccessful. It was the fire balloons. You remember that one?
Yeah, I believe they're called Fugo balloon bombs, which is a lighter-than-air balloon, you know, that has a payload of essentially an anti-personnel bomb that are only about 26 pounds. They're incendiary bombs. They're essentially fire bombs. I believe it detects altitude, and once they drop to a certain altitude, the payload is released. It's really interesting. In the episode, we talk about sort of the mechanism behind it and how that works. It uses like a very simple altimeter, and these types of weapons can be very useful, especially, you know, back in the day when, you know, a lot of homes and things were built out of very flammable material. And if you had like a convoy of these things, clusters of them, they could really do some serious damage.
Yeah, and they're the interesting fact, they're the first ever intercontinental weapon. They're the ancestor of ICBMs.
That's right. And they weren't particularly effective, as you can imagine. I mean, it is very lo-fi, lo-fi technology. And they released them in 1944, a handful of these around Alaska and Alberta, Canada, Arizona, British Columbia, California. Why are they messing with Canada during all this? What do they have to do with anything? I guess they're allies. Colorado, Hawaii, Idaho, Iowa, Kansas, Mexico, Michigan, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, North Dakota, Oregon. Hey, there's Oregon getting hit again. South Dakota, Texas, Utah, Washington, Wyoming, and the Yukon Territory. They launched around 9,000 of these things throughout the project, and they were hoping that around 900 of them would actually reach America. But I think only 300 did, because they literally, it was like a kind of spray
and
pray.
It's a hot air balloon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's going to go with the jet stream, going to get guided. And then, like, you know, you throw a bunch of them at the wall and hopefully, you know, a handful of them stick, but it did not meet their predicted expectations.
I mean, who are we to judge? That's basically what we do with our show. Hoping a few of these will stick in your mind and you'll have some weird facts to throw out with your friends at parties and gatherings. I was thinking a lot about balloons recently because we had a balloon launch as a memorial for thing in my family. And I know that they can be kind of controversial because you don't know where the balloons will end up or what they might end up doing. But we also have here in Atlanta, we have a really cool lantern parade every year. And sometimes, and people also will release those lanterns that fly up based on the heat emitted by the candle. Is that how it works? Is that correct?
I think that's right. Yeah, exactly. It creates heat and the hot air rises. So it pushes them up and they all go up in a flurry. And it's really kind of a beautiful sight. I believe that's coming up not too far. We're kind of entering festival and parade season here in Atlanta. I went to the Inman Park Festival over the weekend and saw a great parade. And it was my first one of the season. Everyone likes a good parade and a good festival. So hopefully you're taking some in around your neck of the woods. And Ben, isn't there a balloon festival or some sort of a hot air balloon that we've threatened to go check it out together, but I can't quite remember where. It's in Norcross, I think, right?
Yeah, I think it may have already happened this year. It is held every... No, it's coming up. It's this May. I just checked it. Okay, so it's the end of May, Friday, May 7th to Sunday, May 29th. That's the regular balloon festival. Then there's a hot air balloon festival the same weekend in Gwinnett. I don't know if the Atlanta Balloon Festival lets you fly in the balloons, but would love to get up in one. I think we talked about it. Max, you were the most reticent on that one, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm not terrified of heights.
I'm not doing it. I'm absolutely terrified.
I think Noel and I are both like, we'll be cats pressed to the bottom.
Go with God, my friend. I will watch you and pray for your well-being and your safe return.
Yeah, but I'll have some cotton candy. I'll be munching on it while I watch you go up there. I am not getting up there at all. I get 10 feet in the air and I freak out.
Oh, you don't even like flights, right? You're not a huge air travel fan.
I'm fine once it gets going. I mean, I'm claustrophobic and afraid of heights. So like planes just kind of like make me like pretty uncomfortable. But if I'm at somebody's apartment and it's like five stories up, we're going on the balcony, I'm like, not doing this.
Okay with heights as long as it's enclosed and I feel like it's sturdy. But like a basket? Are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Get out of
what
town.
Is life if not to be lived? Well, you know what? At least you guys told me before the three of us were walking up to the balloon, at which point the two of you would have dipped back and said, hey, take some pictures. All right, see you, man.
So we'll take some too from the ground, buddy. You're going to look great.
Thanks.
And
I mean, thanks, guys.
And to be honest, at least we've now told you this twice. We have this on record to show you that we've told you this
already. Yeah, you've got the receipts. I get it. But barring our ballooning adventures, we know this one was maybe a little shorter than usual, but we thought it was so wholesome and it was such a beautiful human moment, a beautiful ending to a story that could have been horrific and tragic. We hope you enjoyed this as much as we did. We can't wait to hear your accounts of other strange stories largely left out of textbooks. So let us know. Let us know your cool stories. You can find us on the internet, not just as a show, but as individuals.
That's right. You can find us as individuals. I am exclusively on Instagram @HowNowNoelBrown. How about you, Ben?
You can find me on Instagram, where I'm getting into any number of ill-informed escapades and adventures. You can learn more about that balloon launch if you follow me at Ben Bolin, B-O-W-L-I-N. You can also find me on Twitter if you want to look at some of the research on and off the record that I'm getting into over there. Bonus points for following me on Twitter at Ben Bolin HSW is that you will also inevitably run into Mr. Max Williams.
Yes, you can find me at ATL underscore Max Williams, where, you know, I'll just be tweeting about stuff I like and stuff.
Sports, is, right?
Yeah. Sure, why not? Or no, spores. Just spores.
Just spores. And there are a lot out there to discover. Anyway, story for another day. Thanks to you, Max. Thanks to Eve's Jeffcoat. Thanks to Casey Pegram. Christopher Osiotis here in spirit, returning soon. I don't know. You think Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. the Quizster, would go up in a balloon with me? I'm going to say no.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's a soft no from me, dog. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.